Hi, friendos, it's Danny B, and welcome to Retrostalgia, a critical analysis of every book, TV show, movie, or video game that I've always been told I had to, or whatever. Today, I'll be taking a look at The Legend of Zelda, Let's Go Adventuring. Hey friendos, and welcome to episode 2 of Retrostalgia. Before we get started, I have a couple updates. As of this recording, Retrostalgia is now available on Spotify, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and Anchor only. I got a little ahead of myself last episode and mentioned towards the end that I would appreciate it if you guys left a review on iTunes. Well, we're not on iTunes yet, but hopefully we will be soon enough. I'm working on it, I promise. These things take time, and I need to be a little more patient. Secondly, since the recording of the first episode, Retrostalgia now has a website. You can find episodes and even a contact form, which you can use to give me a review or a recommendation or whatever. If you go to retrostalgiapod.wixsite.com/retrostalgia, I will put a link in the show notes so that you don't have to worry about spelling the website. You can listen to episodes and find all of our social media at the bottom of the page, which leads me to my next point. We do not have a Facebook. I apologize, but at this time there will not be a Facebook account for Retrostalgia. I'm currently having issues with the website, and I'm gonna try and get the page back up, but for now you can find Retrostalgia on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram at RetrostalgiaPod. You can also email the pod at RetrostalgiaPod@gmail.com. That's RetrostalgiaPod@gmail.com. Alright, now that that bullshit is out of the way, let's talk about The Legend of Zelda. The original Legend of Zelda was released for the NES on February 21st, 1986, a little over 8 years before I was born. The title sold over 6.5 million units and is widely considered one of the best video games of all time. So where does that leave me? Well, a brief synopsis of my experience with the Legend of Zelda franchise is... My first exposure to the series was as a kid when I played Super Smash Bros. Melee for the Nintendo GameCube. I would play as Zelda and Sheik and was generally pretty bad at the game. I mean, I still am, but that's besides the point. I didn't get to play an actual Zelda title until I purchased The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time for the 3DS as an adult. I played as far as the end of the Deco Tree dungeon, but that's as far as I got before I put it down. I'm sorry. I know that it's a fantastic game and everyone loves it, and I have every intention of playing it, but for now it's stuck on my list of games that I need to play. However, I have played and finished The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker HD for the Nintendo Wii U, and I fucking love that game. The cutesy art style really drew me in, and the simplistic and entertaining gameplay allowed me to not get too frustrated and keep going. And since the game was on the Wii U, I was able to play the game on the Wii U gamepad while my then boyfriend could play something else on the TV. I have also put many hours into Breath of the Wild for the Wii U. I've gone far enough into it to have completed 2 of the Guardians, but I haven't touched it in a little while. I'll finish it someday. It's a challenge, and I do enjoy the open world, but that also allows me to get easily sidetracked. Other than that, I don't have any experience playing any other Zelda game until I played The Legend of Zelda for the NES. Before we get into the gameplay and my opinions, I would just like to preface this by saying that my playthrough of the game was on the NES Mini or whatever it's called that was released a few years ago. I don't know, nor do I care if there are any discrepancies between this and the original cartridge, but I figured one of y'all might, so there you go. After a few hours of more or less just wandering around and getting my little green ass beat, I began to follow a walkthrough so that I could know what I was doing and stop dying as much, and just to not take too long to play this game, and to stop dying as much, just trying to get to where I thought I was before. I never really got a hang of the overworld map all that much. It's fairly large considering, and I never really got around to memorizing any of the locations or anything. Starting up the game, you're met with the main theme, and it fucking slaps. The whole soundtrack to this game fits the title very well and is wonderful background noise. At least until it's time to name your character save file. It is completely silent, aside from the rupee collection noise, which can be heard every time you move your cursor. It made me feel like my ears had rupees being thrown at them or something, which made me keep misspelling my name and having to go back and having to hear the rupee sound again and again and again. But once you name your Link, the game begins in a clearing with a few ways to go and one obvious cave entrance. As I said earlier, no story is given once you start playing the game. It is assumed more or less that you know what you're here to do and that you are a curious enough person to immediately go into the one and only cave on the screen in order to get the basic like wooden sword from this random old man who lives in caves and other places, I guess. As Link, you grab the sword and hold it up. As the player, you are granted with the derpiest face ever. Now, I realize that this is because of the limitations of the size of the sprites, but that doesn't make it any less fucking hilarious. I couldn't help but laugh anytime I picked up any sort of item that Link would hold up with one hand, because he would give you that same fucking face. I just want to quickly interject here so I can let y'all know something important about me. I kind of suck at video games, like, a lot. I can get better with a lot of repetition and stuff, but for the most part, I have a little bit of a difficult time with them initially. Basically, what I'm trying to say is that in my playthrough of this game, I died a lot. I died like 3 times in the first 10 minutes because I had almost no clue what I was doing. So I am very familiar with the eerily creepy continue screen music. Like, seriously, what the fuck was that music? I felt like I was suddenly being asked to continue playing a creepypasta, and I know that there are plenty of creepypastas that exist about the Legend of Zelda games, but that's beside the point. It haunts my dreams. Speaking of music, if you, like, freeze the game by pressing the select button on the controller, there is no longer any music. It pauses the whole game. However, pressing start will effectively pause the game while bringing up your inventory / stats screen. If you get hit enough to go down to 1 heart, you get to listen to the danger music, which I heard quite frequently and made it even harder to concentrate on what I was doing. Not to mention that when you die, the screen goes all, like, red and you spin around before you're hit again with the creepypasta music. Ugh. While following the walkthrough, I learned of a lot of places across the map featuring these pig creatures that are hiding under bushes you have to burn and behind walls that you have to blow up. These dudes are like playing the world's most rewarding game of hide and seek, in which you didn't even know you were the seeker in. They're so amazed you found them that they give you some cash money before fucking off somewhere. My headcanon is that it's just one really wealthy and bored dude who likes to reward those who are very curious. And that's one thing I will say about this game, which I can confirm about the other Zelda games that I've played. You are generally rewarded for your curiosity and exploration of every area. I probably would have never thought to burn the bushes, and especially not to use my very precious bombs on random cave walls. I do like to do side quests, but only if I'm told what it is. I don't really think outside of the box like that. I'm more of a point A to B sort of person, I guess. From here, I want to give a brief synopsis and opinion of each dungeon and the enemies. I don't want to go on too long since there are 8 dungeons and Death Mountain, but here goes. The first dungeon, and these are the dungeons that I'm following based on my walkthrough. So the first dungeon that we're going to be going through is the Eagle Dungeon. Upon entering the dungeon, I was met with the glorious dungeon music, which fucking slaps. It's a bop, and the soundtrack is killing it once again. There are Keith's enemies, which are spooky little bats, and I love how they have evolved to become like flying eyeballs with wings in Breath of the Wild. So spooky cute and easy to kill, thankfully. I think throughout the entire rest of the game, I just killed them with my boomerang, because then I could get some on the way out and some on the way back when the boomerang was returning to me. Then you meet the gel enemies, which are basically like vibrating water droplets, making them seem like constantly terrified or something. They're so dang puny. The Goria are some kind of animal thing, but to me they are basically just mustachioed dudes with boomerangs, and they're basically no big deal. The first dungeon boss, Aquamantis, is a literal dragon, and for some reason I was not expecting this at all. After the variety of creatures that we have met thus far, I was just expecting the first boss to be less boring of a creature. After a few tries, I made sure I went in with full health so I could just shoot it with my sword's full health laser beams, which are ridiculous, and I don't understand how having full health means that your sword can shoot laser beams, but I'm gonna roll with it because that was very, very helpful for me the entire rest of the game. This boss was a little difficult for me while my health meter was only 3 hearts, but as aforementioned, I died a lot while playing this game, which means I had to constantly start with only 3 hearts of health and having to constantly buy health potions from the old ladies in order to use the sword's ability, you know, for like the 10 seconds I could before I would get hit. I do end up later discovering the fairy fountain, and thank God for the fairy fountain. The fairy is now my patron goddess, and I will defend her to my dying breath because she just helped me out a lot with the rest of the game. Next, I adventured through the moon dungeon. I don't really have much to say about this dungeon. It was pretty straightforward and featured the same creatures as before. But this time, the boss monster, Dodongo, is a fucking triceratops of all things. So first we have a dragon and now a triceratops. Okay then, it's pretty easy to beat, but almost not even worth fighting. The entire dungeon was really just kind of boring. The third dungeon that I went through was the Manji. This dungeon features the Zol creatures, which are little blob enemies that can split into the aforementioned vibrating gel enemies. I also found these cute. The location of the dungeon map in this one is so close to the dungeon boss that there's no real point in getting it. And if you're following a walkthrough like me, there's no real point in getting any of the dungeon maps anyways. But you might also be like me and you have to collect all of the collectibles in the dungeons or whatever. Also, fuck the dark nuts. The sprites make these creatures look like cute little knights or something, but I had a really hard time with these guys my entire playthrough of the game due to their weakness of being hit from behind or to the side only. They aren't the only creatures who do this throughout the game, and so I had a hard time with those creatures too. You can't hit them from the front, and if they touch you, they will quickly suck the soul out of Link's tiny little body. I lost so many lives to these dudes. But anyways, the boss Manhondla, sorry if I'm saying that wrong, it's like a four-headed turtle thing or something, and to defeat it, you have to hit slash cut off each of its heads. I have a question though, how the fuck does this thing walk? Like, from what you can see as you're battling this dude, it has no fucking legs, unless I just missed it. But based on the anatomy of a normal turtle, I figure this thing is either like levitating or has like weird crab legs behind its shell. I don't know. It took me a few times on this one, though I heard on my walkthrough that if you place a bomb in the right spot, you can take the whole thing out, and you can probably guess that I was not able to do that. So I just ended up using my sword. In Dungeon 4, which is the snake dungeon, we're introduced to the Vire, which are these purple creatures who, when hit, can split into two of their keys, but this time they're red. The color difference doesn't make any difference at all. You can still kill them with one hit of your boomerang. My walkthrough advised me to just ignore them, but I found in my playthrough that it was easier for me to maneuver around the keys instead of the Vire, so I just ended up killing them anyways. To each his own, I guess. I kept dying fairly quickly at the boss battle, and so I dealt with the Vire a lot, so I was able to easily begin to just start hacking through them. The boss for this dungeon is Gliok, which is a two-headed dragon. Ooh. And therefore it was doubly as hard to defeat, I guess. I quickly began to actually dislike listening to the dungeon music here, and so I was glad that after this dungeon, my walkthrough made me walk around the overworld for a bit to collect some other things. I retrieved the power bracelet, aka the power croissant, because that's what it fucking looks like. Whatever. From there, I went to the graveyard part of the overworld for some more cash monies, and the graveyards are dope as hell. I adore the black and white aesthetic. Here you can fight some guinea, I hope I'm saying that right, which are adorable and misunderstood little ghosties. Please don't hurt them. The next dungeon, Dungeon 5, is the Lizard. It holds Gibdo, which are like these funky little mummy enemies that dance across the screen at you. I found them very hilarious and not very threatening. They were pretty easy, but you do have to fight lots of the Dark Nuts in this dungeon, and while I was doing this dungeon, I started slowly going insane after having to fight these creatures again and again and again. Also, on a personal note, fuck off whoever designed this dungeon and included two rooms in which you must kill all of the Dark Nuts in order to progress. These rooms are unavoidable, unfortunately. One of them guards the room with a magic flute, which you have to have in order to defeat the boss, and the other one is on the way to the dungeon boss, so there's no way around this. And also, just fuck any, like, level creator who puts in rooms in which you have to defeat all of the enemies in order to progress. I really just don't think that's very fair, and as nice of a challenge as it is, I think that there's a better way that they could have incorporated some challenges into this game. The next dungeon that I completed was Dungeon 6, which was titled The Dragon, and weirdly enough, this dungeon does not actually have a dragon as its boss monster, but this dungeon does have a new enemy, the Orange Wizrobe. As you've heard me say too many times before, I basically think that all of the enemies in this game are dang adorable. They're tough, but cute. I like them. At this point in time, I end up despising them later on, but for now, they're cute. The dungeon is pretty boring, blah blah blah, and then, oh look, there's a magic wand, which according to my walkthrough is an optional item, but like, I'm a long range attack person, so I had to grab this in order to be able to shoot beams, so now my Link can be a Wizrobe. Plus, it's blue, which looks nice, and you can upgrade it later to shoot fucking fireballs along with your laser beam. That's dope. Though it doesn't help at all against the Wizrobes or Dark Nuts, so the rooms in which you have to kill all of the enemies aren't any easier, unfortunately. Another weird monster with one giant eye is our boss this time, called Goma. It takes one hit to kill, as long as you aim for the eye, which is easier said than done. I suggest you use arrows and hide in the doorway until it is about to open its eye. Unfortunately, I didn't figure this out until my third try. The walkthrough I'm following as I play this game is pretty good, but it's a little simplistic in its instructions. It's just like, hit the boss in the eye, then continue to the next room for another Triforce piece, and that's as much detail as it gives me to go on. It got me through the game, so it can't be too bad, I guess, though. Next is Dungeon 7, which is the Demon. All I have to say about this one is that if you follow a walkthrough, this dungeon is the easiest fucking one. You even fight another Aquamensis from the first dungeon again, so if you go in with full health, you basically can't lose. If you stand just past the doorway, you'll never be hit by a fireball and have a clear path straight to him, and you just hit him with your fucking sword laser beams and he's dead and you get another Triforce piece. It's like, no problem. Dungeon 8 is the Lion Dungeon. I literally walked to the left room from the entrance and went, "Darkness? No!" But at least this leads to the magic book. So now my magic wand shoots fire, like I said before. Fuck yeah. Also, now we don't give a fuck about the candle. What was the point of getting to upgrade to the candle? Gliok is back again with a vengeance. He has 4 heads this time. Man, these bosses sure are creative. I'm sure for the time, battling dragons and cyclop crabs and weird turtles was really cool, just not all that great now, at least in comparison to the other games that I've played. But after this, we actually get to go to Death Mountain, which sounds fucking righteous as hell. Death Mountain has different dungeon music, which I liked because the other dungeon music was getting a little old. It's creepier, yet it oddly kind of reminds me of the Pink Panther theme. I'm not exactly sure what about it hits that note in my brain, but I did have to chuckle a little bit when I first went in. There are more of the Wizrobes, and at this point in the game, I'm not sure if I even think they're cute anymore. Thankfully, you can run past them in some areas. In some areas, you have to go back and kill them. Whatever. The next room does have a new enemy, which is a little weird to me this late in the game. It's Lanmola, which are faster Moldorms with heads, which are the fiery snake dudes in other dungeons. I didn't mention them at all earlier because any room in which I did encounter them, which was very seldom, all you had to do was just walk past them to the next door. You didn't really have to battle them at all. At least in my playthrough, I didn't. This dungeon has a couple rooms in which you have to defeat all of the enemies and in order to progress, and the first one that it throws at us is an area in which you have to defeat like-likes in order to progress. Like, the stupid little sort of worm creatures that can steal your magical shield? Not really a bit of a challenge, you know? It's very easy. And then we get another new enemy, Patra. It's a bunch of floating eyes surrounding a bigger floating eye. I love the aesthetic, but I have to wonder, are eyes considered more creepy in Japanese culture? Or did one of the creature designers have, like, a weird eye fetish or something? I don't know. After fighting more of the fucking Wizrobes, you get another ring, which makes you red, like now, and you take less damage, which is awesome, because, as I've mentioned before, I get hit a lot. The next old man that you encounter gives some good advice for once. Go to the next room. Thanks, dude. Except that the next room is filled with Wizrobes that you have to kill in order to progress to the next area. So fuck you, old man. Then we have some boring enemies before we face another Pathra that has eyes that move in an elliptical pattern, and it looks 3D, which is so cool. I walked into the room and was just like, yo, it was really cool. Then you have to battle more Wizrobes. Fuck you, Nintendo, because I was actually doing pretty good in this area until I died here and I had to go farm for rupees again to get another double potion, because that's what I was advised to do. The second time around in this dungeon was a lot easier since many of the previous rooms were now monsterless, which I will give the creators credit for, that aside from the rooms in which you have to defeat the enemies in order to progress, if you kill all of the monsters in that room, they pretty much stay dead. So I really just had to like quickly maneuver my way back to where I was. I was easily able to grab the silver arrow, which you need in order to actually defeat Ganon, even though you literally shoot an arrow at him once. but whatever. Following my walkthrough, I actually defeated Ganon on my first try. It was a little hard trying to find him while he was invisible and shooting fireballs at me. When I first walked into the room, I was very nervous that the statues were gonna shoot fireballs at me, and that would have been terrifying. I actually ended up just like walking into Ganon a lot before I could actually slash him with my sword, but I did end up beating him. He turned brown, and then I shot him with my silver arrow, and he just disintegrates into a pile of ashes. And there's the other corner of the Triforce. Cool. Then you head north and go to the next room. You finally meet up with your bae, Zelda. She's surrounded by some fire that you can apparently get rid of with just your sword somehow. And roll credits. That's the end of the game. You have your Triforce, you got the one from Ganon, and then you and Zelda are together, so that's it. I don't really know what happens to the story from here on out, but it was pretty cool. But there wasn't really all that much story here except for Save the Princess, which if you hold still on the title screen when you first start up the game, if you don't press start, it will like scroll and then give you a very brief story to go on. So that's not too bad. I know that this game was revolutionary and an instant classic when it was released, but honestly, I don't quite see what the hype is about. Don't get me wrong, it's not a bad game at all, and it was kind of fun, and the series overall has a great story. However, this game, as I said before, did not have very much, and I am a very story-driven person, so it was hard for me to really, like, connect to Link and actually be like, yes, I must get all of the pieces of the Triforce so that I can save Zelda, you know? I know that the classic games like Legend of Zelda usually included a story in the game manual or on the box or something that players were expected to read before playing the game in order to get a better idea of the game that they're about to play. It would usually, like, go through the story a bit more and give you, like, more detailed drawings since the technology was very limited at the time. And so I understand why there wasn't like a big to-do at the beginning. Hey Link, you have to go rescue the princess, whatever. But also, one thing that I've always wondered is how exactly people thought that the main character of this game, the character that you play as, that his name was Zelda. Looking at the little short summary of Link's mission on the title screen, which names him as Link, I think pretty much states that he is Link and the princess is Zelda. So although it's the Legend of Zelda, it just didn't really make sense for me how people would confuse the two. So now that I've finally taken the time to play the original Legend of Zelda, I have a recommendation for you. This week, I would like to recommend my all-time favorite game, Luigi's Mansion, for the Nintendo GameCube. Luigi's Mansion is another action-adventure game from Nintendo that was a launch title for the GameCube. My sibling received the console for Christmas, and I got a talking doll. Fuck the gender construct and its stereotype. Anyways, it was an instant hit in my household, and I absolutely fell in love with it. I have basically the whole game memorized down to where all of the special ghosts are hidden and how to 100% the game and get the most lavish mansion at the end of the game. If you don't know what this game is or have never heard of it, a short summary is that the main character, Luigi, famously of the Mario Bros, has quote-unquote won a mysterious mansion and a contest and journeys to the mansion to collect his winnings or whatever. But surprise, the mansion is full of ghosts, as well as Mario has been kidnapped, meaning that Luigi gets to be the hero in this game and battles his way through the mansion to his brother, who is trapped in a painting, by the way. As it goes along, there's apparently just a shitload of money and jewels laying around. So like any good person, he pockets all of it, and the end of the game is you spending the money to build a new, hopefully ghost-free mansion, and the lavishness of the mansion is determined by the value of everything you collected before the end of the game. This game is the start of my love of Luigi and booze, as well as ghosts in general. It's easy, fun, and very rewarding, I think. It's also one of the first games that I personally know of that had a sort of New Game Plus feature. Once you beat the game, you can then play through it again in the Hidden Mansion, where the ghosts are a little harder, but there's a ton more money to earn. It's pretty neat, actually. I am excited for the third one to come out. I hope to play it when it releases this October. I think it actually releases on Halloween. Unfortunately, I don't have a Switch yet, but I'm considering getting one of the Switch Lites. How do you guys feel about that? Do you love it? Do you hate it? Do you wish that it didn't exist? Do you wish that Nintendo would stop literally reaching into your wallet and your pockets and pulling out all of your cash? How do you feel? And that about wraps up our adventure. If you have a suggestion or recommendation for me, please email the pod at retrosalgiapod@gmail.com. You can also follow the pod on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram at retrosalgiapod. The podcast theme for Retrostalgia is Inky and Blinky's Band, and the ad music is Young Visionaries, both by Eric Matias. You can find his other work at soundimage.org. Please let me know what you think of the episode and the show using the contact form on our website, which I will link in the show notes. I promise to read all of your comments and suggestions. However, I can't promise that I'll take your advice or anything. Also, please let me know what else you would like to see from the pod. If you liked this, cool, send it to someone who you think would enjoy it. If you hated this, also cool, send it to someone who will make fun of me with you. Either way, I'll see you again in 2 weeks for episode 3. Until then, I'm Danny B, and as always, be kind, please rewind.